The following is an encore episode of Water Cooler Catechism with Tom Riello and Justin Costanza.
Hey, I'm Tom Riello, the Chair of Theology at Montgomery Catholic Preparatory School.
And I'm Justin Costanza, the Principal of the Middle and High School here at Montgomery Catholic Preparatory School. And welcome to Water Cooler Catechism. Tom, this is probably the most special show that we have done together, and I'm so excited to bring onto the program today Dr. Haywood Robinson. Dr. Robinson, welcome. Thank you for being with us, and the listening audience is going to get to meet a truly amazing person in you. Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you, Justin. Thank you, Tom, for being here. It's going to be a wonderful pleasure on your show.
It is. So Dr. Robinson, if you're not familiar in the listening audience, is a former abortionist. That's right, a former abortionist here on Water Cooler Catechism, just sitting here talking around the water cooler with Justin and Tom about his previous life. And I say previous life because now he works with 40 Days for Life. Talk about an unplanned turn of events. Doc, not to drop a hint there to the major motion picture that obviously your group is a huge part of, and I know that the folks listening to Water Cooler Catechism are probably big fans of Unplanned and all that it did for this movement. But Doc, let's jump right into it. Let's go back. Late 70s, early 80s. You are Southern California, making your way to Texas. Talk to us about your role in the abortion industry.
Well, graduated from medical school, University of California, Irvine, in 1978. Always wanted to do family medicine, or at least while I was in medical school, I made that decision. Returned back to my hometown area of Southern California, Compton, just a few miles from where I grew up, and I trained in residency at Martin Luther King Hospital, Charles R. Drew Medical Center in Compton there. For 3 years, I received family practice training. It's where I also met my wife, and we practiced together for 38 years, now retired. Since June 30th. But at that institution, while on the obstetrics and gynecology service, I learned how to do the abortion procedure. The procedure is called a DNC, or a dilation and curettage. That's the procedure that is performed for most first trimester abortions. Now, this procedure, the DNC, is one that many in the audience may have had. It's the same procedure that's performed on women when they've had a spontaneous abortion or a miscarriage, because that tissue needs to be removed because of the risk of infection. Well, I learned to do that procedure, and as a matter of fact, my wife was a part of my training at that hospital. Once I had that skill of how to do an abortion. In Southern California, there were so many facilities in the area that needed physicians to work their evil practice and perform abortions. And that's what we did after hours, weekends. It's easy money. We would call the facility up on the same day or the day prior, asking, well, how many am I going to have tomorrow? How many am I going to have this evening? Because you were paid by the abortion. Per killing, you were paid several hundred dollars. And for someone in residency, this was a lot of money. The abortion industry is fueled by money. If you subtract the variable of money out of the abortion equation, we wouldn't be discussing this on this radio show, and there would never have been a Roe v. Wade, and we wouldn't have organizations like Planned Parenthood.
One of the things I'm very privileged where I work at Montgomery Catholic Preparatory School to teach high school seniors, and what you just said, doctor, is what I tell them. If abortion were not a multi-billion-dollar industry, no politician would take the issue on, because it wouldn't be worth it. It's a money-making industry.
It's a money-making industry, and they support candidates for office. They also get an enormous amount of our tax money. It is decreasing. A lot of people in the audience don't realize, unfortunately, Planned Parenthood receives money from several different faucets, so to speak, from the federal government. Just recently, they turned down their Title X money, but because of those multiple faucets that give them tax money, it's going to be a continued challenge to get them totally cut off from our tax money. But I'm believing if we can keep things going in the same direction, our tax money will no longer be going to organizations like Planned Parenthood.
And, Doc, let's be honest. Again, if you're just joining us here on Water Cooler Catechism, our guest, Dr. Haywood Robinson, a former abortionist and now a board member for the 40 Days for Life here in Montgomery, to speak to the groups that rally behind our pro-life movement here in Montgomery and here in the Archdiocese of Mobile. And Dr. Haywood, it is just a great opportunity to talk to you today. But let's go back to what you just said. You personally chose to perform these abortions, and what was your driving factor behind it? Not just the industry's driving factor, but for you in the late 70s and early 80s.
Well, I've mentioned the money, but it's the other thing where even when you know something inside is wrong, it's a funny thing how I think when you don't know the Lord, how you have a tendency to be drawn toward evil. And even though I know from a scientific point of view that human development starts at conception, I know when you examine our framers' documents, the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, you see all the evidence that this life should be protected. That's why the last word in the preamble is about posterity, that the equal protection under the law is supposed to apply to all. But it's a funny thing about evil, and it's a funny way how the devil uses deception to allow you to live a lifestyle of wrong. And then when I talk about that wrong, I talk about getting in a car, driving to an abortion facility, going into that facility, and walking into a room, a procedure room, with a woman you've never met, do a procedure that takes her baby away, and then go on to the next room and do the same thing until you've taken care of all of those women in that reception room. That's the kind of evil that you can become involved in. It's an incremental process. I tell students, don't even go see your first abortion, because that's the beginning of this desensitization and dehumanization process that you have to experience in order to destroy an innocent preborn child. So it's through dehumanization and also through the craftiness of the enemy who works within your mind, deceiving you, telling you things like, well, you know, they're going to get the abortion anyway. You're skilled enough to do it. That baby probably wasn't going to be provided for. You know, they come up with all kinds of excuses that makes it a little bit easier for you to take the money and run.
Dr. Robinson, you hit on something Tom and I address not only on this program week after week, but also in our classrooms at Montgomery Catholic. Our students are living in a culture where week after week, day after day, really minute after minute, they are so desensitized by what's in front of them on their smartphones, on their computers, what they see, even in their peers, but absolutely on television and in movies and what culture around them says is okay and is the norm is really part of what the enemy is putting in front of us. And, you know, so, Tom, we see that every day. And here we hear a former abortionist saying that is even present in the medical procedure. That is present as our newest doctors are learning their skill, learning their craft. I thought it was interesting that you mentioned this is the DNC is a procedure that is used not only as an abortion, but in these instances where there is a legitimate miscarriage. And so this is a skill that you have to have. And it's crazy to think that that has been twisted in this way and now used in the way that it is. And I hope that our young people that are listening, and hopefully there are so many young people listening, they hear how easy it is to really fall into this trap of, here's an easy out. We can make the excuses. And you had a litany of excuses that you have heard, and we hear it in the world so often. Talk to us. I love what you said. When you don't have the Lord, you are drawn to evil. That really resonated in this room today. Tell us what changed for you, because this is a man, I just met you about 18 minutes ago, and this is a man of the Lord. So what shifted? What changed?
Well, we'd have to go back to March of 1986, and I happened to be attending a concert, a contemporary Christian music concert, at the church where I still attend. The artist, Mr. Leon Patello, quite an instrument player, quite a singer. And about halfway through that concert, he had somewhat of an intermission, and he said, for those people in the audience who want things to be 100% right with God, stand up. Now, generally, I'm not going to stand up on a moment's or an instant's notice based on someone saying something from the stage, but I just stood up immediately. I was there with my mother because my wife was at home because he was about 3 weeks from having our last child, and she didn't want to move around that much that day. Well, Leon Patello prayed. And I know that was the moment that the Lord came into my life. It wasn't as dramatic as Damascus Road for Saul, but I think we all have different testimonies and different ways that the Lord comes to us. Many times people say, well, I found Jesus. Well, no, I think what he does, he comes after us. He knocks at that door. He seeks us out. And he saves us, and that's what he did for me. Now, soon thereafter, I was raised in a church that really did not teach the gospel, didn't teach me the basic tenets of what this whole salvation experience is like and what it means to be a believer and to live a transformed life. However, my roommate in medical school is a son of a Pentecostal preacher. And he just happened to be coming for the delivery of this last child. So basically what he did was sat down and started giving me the basic tenets of the gospel and showing me how now I am a new creature. I am now a follower of Christ. My mind is now transformed by Jesus, by him renewing my mind. He who had no sin became sin that we might know the righteousness of God. And so what I can say is I'm 67 now. I really enjoyed saying this when I was 66. I spent 33 years at BC, 33 years AD. So now I'm 33, 34. The latter 34, oh, what a ride. It's been so wonderful being on the side of the Lord, but also to know that Jesus, you know, when he saves you, he's transforming you every day. I never have had my nose rubbed into the horrible sin of abortion or anything that I've been involved in that I know that wasn't his will. But to have the blessed assurance that when I go to sleep at night, I'm forgiven. And but to know that if I don't wake up, I know where I'm going, and the Lord is going to be there. But for the remaining days that I'm here on earth, I want to give my life for the Lord and the particular ministry you mentioned, 40 days, and the pro-life movement. That's where I want to truly put my energy and my spiritual gifts.
You know, one of the things, I love how you put that about the Lord coming into your life. It's not so much that we who make that happen. It's something he does in our lives. When he came into your life, what impact did that make in your medical practice? Did you try to figure out ways to integrate his presence with, you know, because you hear a lot of times people in the medical industry, I feel like I'm just a number. I feel like I just kind of, you know, I'm just a statistic to come in and out 10 minutes. How did that transform your medical practice?
Yeah, Tom, that's a really good question. When my wife and I came to know the Lord, and when he indwelled us, he used our practice as a ministry. I believe medicine is a ministry. It's the most important thing to anyone is their life and their health. Now, because we were in private practice, we had the ability to make certain decisions on what we're going to do and the way we're going to do it. I was in a church, still am in a church, that we talk about prayer and the importance of it. We started to pray with our patients, and patients would say, "Oh, doctor, you're the first doctor that ever prayed for me. You're the first doctor that, you know, laid hands on me, and this happened and that happened." People are really blessed when they know that this minister of the healing arts actually works under the great physician, the Lord Jesus Christ. And that was the biggest thing, I think, that happened. Plus the artwork and pictures and the music that we played in our office all would give people a good idea that this is not a typical office. Unfortunately now, private practice is a very difficult thing to do. It's hard to cover overhead, so most doctors now are employees of large delivery systems. And that same depersonalization that I talked about earlier, unfortunately, it's hit the entire practice of medicine, because now the physician is no longer the partner of the patient. They're the employee of the corporation. Mm-hmm. So they don't even call them patients anymore. We call them lives. We have depersonalized medicine, unfortunately. But we have been blessed that we can say that medicine has been a ministry to us. Plus, we were involved with a medical missionary work. My wife's home in Trinidad. We've been to places like Nigeria where we have seen the Lord do miracles in medicine. Yes, indeed.
God bless you and your wife. It's so special to see the Lord truly is working through you, and I know through your wife and your family. So tell us real quick, how many kids did you guys have?
Well, my wife and I have two. There are 37 and 33. I was blessed to have a daughter before we got married. She is a little older. Three, and then we quasi-adopted a fourth child. And three of those four girls are physicians. One's OBGYN. The oldest is an internist. And the baby is a specialist in what we refer to as functional medicine. So we've been blessed to see them go into various branches of medicine, but we never pushed them. I know part of our audience is, children who are in school, and I know some parents are listening. The worst possible thing you can do to a child is force them or make them feel guilty that they're not going into what their parents' profession is or what their parents want them to do. And you parents out there, do not try to live your lives vicariously through your children. Please don't do that to them.
Tom seniors will school the parents on free will. So I think we're in a really good place. Here's another crazy question for you. Did you perform abortions as a father? Did you have children during the time that you performed abortions?
You better think about that.
Got to do a little bit of math,
Yeah, the oldest, yes. Yes, I did. But, you know, that's a good question. And it shows the disconnect. It shows the disconnect, how you can have a child and still kill a child. You see, it's how the enemy distorts your mind.
Well, and here's a mind in front of us that has worked to save so many lives. That's just, to me, is proof that the enemy can do that to almost anybody. We have to try so hard. And as a parent, I think of my young children and the world that they will grow up in. I can't imagine the difficulties that they'll face face socially and some of the difficulties that their culture is going to put in their way. And so here's a guy, it just made me think while you're talking, even to be able to disassociate fatherhood with the procedure in the medical room is powerful. And I think that it's something people need to hear. Now, transitioning a little bit, you're not in the medical profession anymore. You've retired, and you are out working for 40 Days for Life, a group that we have heard so much about that is doing so many good things, obviously behind the movie Unplanned that came out in theaters in the last couple years. And I know that you have worked with Abby from the film and Sean Carney as well. Tell us a little bit about your work. And it's not like you just started this. You've been doing this a long time, but you got a little more time on your hands now. I know you get to do more. Tell us a little bit about what you do at 40 Days for Life.
Well, just to add to that, I was a board member after I retired June 28th. I became a staff member on July the 1st. So I am
moved a long from, retirement.
Oh, 2 days of retirement.
Sean scapped you up pretty quick, huh?
It was a great weekend. Well, July 1st, I became Director of Medical Affairs and Education. So I write articles, do podcasts. Right now we're in the midst of our fall campaign, our 40 Days fall campaign, which started September 25th and will go on for 40 days. Our last day is November 4th. November 3rd. I was off a day there. And I'm traveling around the country supporting those campaign prayer venues this morning. I was speaking at a pregnancy resource center in Columbus the day before that. I was in Birmingham doing the same thing. We pray outside of abortion facilities. Some of them are Planned Parenthood, some are not. Today I'll be speaking at another venue. But prayer is the key. The first place this happened was College Station, and I've been with the movement since the very, very beginning. We started with one venue in College Station, and I'm blessed to say that, and since the movie Unplanned, which really accelerated our movement, we moved from 420 campaign venues in just the previous spring campaign to 505 campaign venues around the planet. We're in a multitude of countries. We just brought on India and the Philippines as two new countries. We've got people all around the world praying, and I try to encourage people in the movement that when you're praying, just imagine we're gathered hand in hand with people in Mexico, people in Colombia, people in you know, South America, Croatia. We're all together for one purpose, and that's to pray for an end of abortion. And we have to believe the prayers of the righteous availeth much, and we have to believe that this abortion thing is going to stop. It's the greatest tragedy in the history of humanity. We're having 56 million abortions per year on the planet, about a million of them in our country. There's nothing like that in the history of humankind when you talk about the loss of human life. So we have to believe that I'm picking on the United States to be the first developed country to make abortion illegal again, right? And be a witness to the remaining countries on this planet that we are going to, again, value life.
You know, cultivating a culture of life is so huge. I know for us here in Montgomery, one of the things that our kids, and I think this is one of the reasons why I think we're seeing a lot of problems culturally with this and politically, is Planned Parenthood knows what they're up against. They know, because statistically the trajectory is when you're younger, you tend to be a little bit more carefree and it's okay. But what we're seeing today in the last 10, 15 years is a dramatic shift amongst young people. I see it with our students. Justin will tell you, our little old school, 300 students, will bring 3 busloads of kids to Washington, D.C. And it is not a vacation. It is arduous, but they love it. They love it. We will pack 170 kids three buses going to Washington, D.C. for the March for Life. They know the powers that be, the enemy he knows who's behind it all, and his little minions, the Planned Parenthoods of the world, they know that when these kids get older and have families, you statistically, you actually become more pro-life. So if it's the case where young people today are 7 out of 10 pro-life, where does this go for Planned Parenthood? And they're fighting like heck.
Well, the one thing we're doing, when you're pro-life, you have children. And the pro-lifers are having children. What we're seeing in the general population is a horrible, horrible decline in marriage. Mm-hmm. When you're married, okay, you're not a selfish. You got to take care of a spouse. Got to take care of children. When you're single, it's all about you. And you mentioned something very important there, Tom. I've been to the March for Life, and boy, any of you guys out there listening, you got to find a time to go to that.
Amen.
You will never be more encouraged than when you see these thousands of young people sold out. Now, we talk about, you know, a lot of the young people having, you know, issues and stuff, but let me tell you about these young people in the pro-life movement. They have said they're going to stop this abortion thing in their generation, and they are serious about
it. It's going to happen, brother.
It's going to happen,
in our
lifetime. I love it. I love it.
You made me think of January 2016. We brought a group up with the snow, and people were canceling. Those kids still made it up. It was the most profound moment. Through that, we had one of our alumni from a couple of years ago, Agnes Armstrong, class of 16. She addressed the March for Life.
Okay. I think Agnes
addressed the March for Life from Montgomery Catholic. And we led the march. We led the march in 2018.
That's great.
You're choking me up, brother, talking about this. I'm like, let's go march.
But that didn't slow us down. But it's the timing of the Lord, even though it was snowmageddon. You know, the Lord at least held it off till the very end there. We were stranded there for a few days, but that was okay.
Sure was. Well, Dr. Haywood Robinson, our guest today on Water Cooler Catechism. This is the fastest half hour Tom and I have ever spent in the booth, and we want to say thanks so much to Dr. Haywood Robinson, a former abortionist who has joined us today. This is Tom and Justin signing off from Water Cooler Catechism.